Kamala. Welcome again to an episode of Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. This season, of course, we're carrying on with White Dragons, All-American Ninjas. And so, I am 8th Dan, Stan Adu. And I'm joined by my good buddies. So, my good buddies are in the house. Jack Hall. Black Jack Hall. I almost forgot. Black Jack Hall.
That's me. Yo.
All right. Nick Boxer, are you here?
Greetings and salutations, my lovelies.
Okay, that's so weird all the time. And gentlemen, Jim Cotta.
I am thrilled to be here on the specialist of occasions.
this most monumental of occasions. Well, let me tell you, before anybody asks, Brad is away again this episode. He's out on tour. He is currently touring the wilds of the Everglades of Florida.
Oh.
So he is not going to be
joining
us.
That. No, actually, I would rather do nothing. Talk about this subject. There's nothing in the world.
I really hope he's researching gator bait for later on.
Oh, see, that would be great. I did tell him that he's got to find as many like crazy B-movie suggestions from Florida as he possibly could. So hopefully we're going to have a whole season of like Florida B.
Yeah, Florida. I mean, that's the wrong place to go for weird movies.
And I'd be thinking with 8th Dan Stanadu and myself, Black Jack Hall. You know, I was thinking the nicknames for the other guys here. I was thinking Jukin and Jive and Jim Cotta. And Sick Kick Nick Boxer.
Okay. Well,
you
continue
to think about that. We'll get back.
Work in progress.
Not quite sure we're there yet, but that's okay. Oh man, so I think I'm probably really proud to bring up what is our current movie that we will be talking about. It is, we're skipping ahead to Ninja 3, The Domination. And I have a feeling that one of those words is going to really, you know, come out today. The domination part, I think, is going to come out.
Damn, I was really hoping for the 3 to really come out.
more 3. And now, I know, because this movie is just so crazy, that I know that Nick Boxer is going to be able to do a great job of summarizing this bad boy.
You know, I see you guys are making a big deal out of this. This film is absolutely logical within its own world.
Fuck off.
I love this film. This is my
best
film.
I love this film, but...
No. You know, once you get past that first scene of the ninja being shot 900 times point blank and walking away, it is cohesive to that original film logic. Love this film. But anyway, let's jump into a brief recap. A ninja...
Yep, you know, I remember that part.
Is on assignment. He is killing some people. He gets his target, but unfortunately, the cops are a little too quick for him. And, his body is too damaged by a hail of bullets to continue on. So, he sort of... he sort of possesses a young local telephone worker and goes on a rampage killing cops and basically making this poor telephone employee's life a living hell. But, you know, she does have time to robicize and make a couple really bad hookups with a cop that feels it absolutely necessary to sexually harass her at every given turn. Did I get the movie down?
No. Wait, did I watch Ninja? Did I watch Ninja 2: The Domination by accident?
I mean, one of the first things that I think is very important to remember is that on the box, I believe that it says that only a ninja can kill a ninja. So as long as you go in with that,
then you are using, if 14 cops show up and shoot bullets at a guy for 15 straight minutes at point blank range, it has no chance. That will not kill him because they're not shot by ninjas.
Unless one of those cops is a ninja, and obviously none of those cops were ninjas.
So I mean, we all grew up in the age of the ninja. This was our childhood. It was definitely the age of the ninja. We grew up with G.I. Joe cartoons and toys, and I read Ninja magazines. There were tons of magazines, but so you could learn how to be a ninja from the magazine.
I was not allowed to read those. Just tell you, those were considered far too adult for me.
Fair enough.
They still are, man. You don't go back looking for them, man.
I wonder if you can actually, are there still ninja magazines? Well, great. Now I'll be looking that up. But I'm trying to remember in the history of film, the film development of ninjas. Is this when we get the supernatural ninja? Like, did it exist prior to this? Like, this is a really supernatural film, and ninjas were essentially assassin characters up till this.
It definitely existed within like the Shaw Brothers realm. Yeah, no, I got some films to show you with ninja. Yeah, they can run on water. I have one where bunches of naked ninjas, female ninjas, jump out of a small pot.
Why did not suggest that?
Oh, it's on my list. It's called Death Duel. It's awesome.
Well, yeah.
That's not awesome, in fairness.
Okay, now...
Mythic ninjas hadn't reached this side of the world, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
All right, well, it has been suggested that because due to the sheer awesomeness of the domination, that we should start the scoring right away so that we stand a chance of getting through the scoring within a relatively reasonable amount of time for the listeners.
Not to telegraph too much, but I'm very curious to see the scores given the amount of chatter there has been on our private feeds about about this film. All right, we're just going to jump right into it then.
Let's just do absolutely. It because I believe that we'll definitely stall along the way.
Yeah, we might be a half hour on one of the categories. So we're going to jump right into scoring. And as always, we rate these movies on five different categories, none of which are objective quality. They are all about the enjoyment of the film. Our first category we call schlock appeal. Stan.
Sometimes it feels good to be first. But now... Honestly, one of the craziest things about this is that it is the most intensely explosive movie of everything. I think they put everything plus the kitchen sink into this movie. And to honest for me, I pulled a couple points back because I honestly felt like there was too much. It was almost too much of a good thing. So I'm going to give it an 8.
So right off the top, we know that this isn't getting a perfect score. All right, fine. Be that.
The disappointment. Wait a second. There's still modifiers. It might.
There are.
Usually I go next. Nick Boxer. I will throw this out there. I'm giving this one a perfect 10. I mean... This is schlock defined. I had so much fun. It is just fun. I wish I saw this in the theaters.
Oh, we all do.
Hell, I gave it a 9 on the soundtrack alone.
Oh my god.
For schlock. Oh, man, I am so hoping we have some Facts of Fury on that soundtrack. Because the song Night Bites blew my mind. I must watch that scene, which just has her climbing a telephone pole for like a seemingly really long time and playing Night Bites. Fights or Bites. I could never make it out. But it was awesome. I want that soundtrack.
It would be great if that soundtrack was available. They need to do like a Canon Movies soundtrack box set.
I want like all of these songs to be a ringtone. Just like every time my phone rings, it plays 50 minutes of music from this movie.
This is an incredible movie. Now I would have given this a 10, but then I saw one of the next movies we're going to review, so I have to give it a 9.
Because grading on a curve.
Because something actually outschlocked this that's coming up, yeah, which is incredible. So this will stick at a 9 because that's the new benchmark for a 10. But it's still amazing. And you guys are laughing because you know what movie that is.
I do indeed. When I think back to the VHS era, I don't think there's any movie, not just the movie, but the title itself, that sums up the VHS action era more to me than Ninja 3 The Domination, which I'm going to be totally honest, until the age of the internet, I was convinced that there was no Ninja 1 and 2. I thought that they really called it Ninja 3 The Domination and just said, I don't know, sequels are in right now. People will think that it's a successful series if we put 3 on it.
Only thing Canon Films would have done.
But honestly, I love the fact that the first one is called Enter the Ninja.
Enter the Ninja and Return of the Ninja.
Revenge of the Ninja.
And neither one has anything to do. None of the three have anything to do with each other.
Rage of Honor came out at the same time and has the same stars. So why wasn't that the third one in the series?
And why not Ninja 4? so it has a couple of the same actors, but not playing the same characters from movie to movie, which is just astounding.
I'm not sure they're playing the same characters within this movie.
I personally think that's awesome. Like, to me, that is a selling point when you have the same actor in like a trilogy playing different roles in each one. Like, that's great stuff.
In hindsight, that's what they should have done for Die Hard. Let's just do a totally different action film starring Bruce Willis as a totally different character each time. But I'm giving this a perfect 10. This is like this like is one, along with Gymkhana, this is one of the ones that I think of as like the quintessential schlocky action films.
Well, it's up there, that's for damn sure.
All right, our next category, we call this More Heart Than Budget. Stan,
I don't know how not to give this a really high score, because as I said before, they threw in everything. It was there was no point. I think when they handed in the script, there was nobody that was going through it and saying, no, we can't do that, we can't do that, we can't do that. It was just like, I don't care how you do it, just, you know, like smoking light effects from a video game, you know, system. Yeah, no problem. Arcade game. Yeah, let's do it. You know, you want to do that? Let's do it. So I'm going to give it a 9.
All right.
I'm going fairly high on this one, too. You can tell everyone in this movie thought they were in a real movie. They hit that, like, that like, perfect naivete thing where, you know, they somebody thought they were going to get an Oscar from this thing. I'm sure of it. So everyone was really honest with their talent level.
I don't know why the special effects guy didn't get an Oscar.
So the I can tell you right now that the I've listened to the commentary track on the Blu-ray, Sam Furstenberg and Steve Lambert, the stunt coordinator, and they totally still think it's a good movie.
That's awesome.
It is a good movie.
Well, it is, but they think it's a good movie because everything was done so well, and that's why everybody appreciates it. They think that's why it's a cult classic, and they're doing this audio commentary track is because people appreciate how they did make more, you know, Heart Than Gold or Heart Than Budget out of what they managed to do with it, and how, you know, amazing it is. And it's amazing not in the way that they know it is. That's and the video game with the lasers coming out of it being an example is Sam Furstenberg's, just like nowadays, so they would do this with because he's Israeli. Nowadays we do this with the computers, but then we didn't know and we had to do it ourselves. This took a long time, but nobody in the 1980s had ever seen special effects like this before. So
I wonder why.
Never seen lasers in 1984. According to him. It's a 9.
I totally missed Nick's score. Did you actually give it?
Right off the top, 8.
8, all right. Oh, man. Okay, so we mentioned this, the laser light show. I think that this, I'm going to give this a 9, and I'm going to focus it down on one scene. So there's a scene in this film that is the most 1980s scene ever made. This scene has an arcade game with laser lights. It has a payphone in the apartment. It has a flying ninja sword. It has an aerobic outfit.
Oh, by the way, that flying ninja sword, not done with computers. That nice. Was all physical. Oh, no. Special effects. That's all sure to tell us.
You can
that's
see the wire. Part. You can see the wire.
This is, look at this. This is special. This is all, none of computers here. This is all physical special effects. Amazing. Amazing.
Were they able to bring in John Dykstra? He would have finished working on Return of the Jedi by then.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that he was there.
All of this. Oh. And in the background of this shot is a Patrick Nagel print that has glowing sunglasses on it.
Oh, man.
I saw that. And when it
damn. Flashes past that and the sunglasses truly glow, it is a thing to behold. It's one of those moments, like it flashes by it a couple of times in that scene, and you're just like, whoa. Because you actually forget about the fact that there's a floating sword that makes it look looks like it was made out of balsa wood. You know,
the floating sword is the least weird thing in the whole scene. Yeah, like the floating sword is like, well, that part makes sense. Yeah. I mean, sure, there's basically like, you know, Sigourney Weaver's apartment from Ghostbusters is where the closet came from. But
the floating sword is that based on the idea that you've already watched a ninja get shot, you know, 300 times by the police and still essentially survive. Once you've accepted that concept, then a floating sword is truly nothing. That's where it breaks, though, is the fact that you do have the laser coming out of the arcade machine with the lights and the
she's tilted and heading towards the she tilts like the floor tilts and she's heading towards the closet. She's being dragged in there by some ghost. We don't know why, since it's in her, but it wants to get her. But they actually did have a create a set and raise and tilt it like that. So she really was fighting to keep from getting out of the closet. That's among your facts of fury. So that's, you know, an example of more heart than gold, right?
That is awesome stuff.
Oh man, just I don't even know.
And I like that. I like that Jack has changed it to be more heart than gold now.
I don't even know.
It's a bit more conceptual, but I kind of like it. So let's talk about the sword while we're here. Sure. You had mentioned the balsa wood sword as it's floating. There are other times, like when she first meets the ninja and is possessed by the ninja, where it appears to be a hunk of cardboard. It's just a regular sword, but to make it more ninja-y, it's got this square piece of cardboard. If you're wondering where the hilt of that goes,
and the swords were made out of either bamboo, rubber, or aluminum.
Nice.
There's your Fact of Fury.
You know, I was unable to detect the difference between any of the swords during this entire movie.
You need to watch the Blu-ray.
I bought it completely.
Within the suspension of disbelief. That's good. What's it called? The guard. The guard at the top of the hilt, the square part. So that looks like it's made out of cardboard. But was I right? I want to check the facts of fury here. Was I right that the guard from another sword is the guy's eye patch in the film?
You know what? I don't know that one, but.
Oh, yeah, the character that Sho Kusugi plays with his eye patch, which truly looks like it is something like that.
By the way, proudly, his idea.
Nice.
His character contribution.
Okay.
He's got this, like, four times the size of a regular eye patch that it really looks to me like it's the guard off a sword, because it's got this weird kind of triangular slit in the middle of it, which is odd for an eye patch.
Well, yeah, because it's almost like you expect that he's like, well, I really want to be able to see, but I really want to wear the eye patch, so I really got to put the cut in there so that I can see. You know,
the eye patch with a hole in it. That'll be.
I really thought we needed to watch Ninja 2 to get that story.
That's probably it. Yeah,
that's
continuity thing.
That makes good sense.
Gotta be it. Yes.
Okay. I hope we've all been keeping ourselves healthy and are ready for a long haul here, because it's time to get into the next category that we call what the fuck moments. The moments of this film that make no sense, and you don't even know how they made it into a film, let alone this film.
Okay, let's limit it to just the what the fuck moments that occurred between in the first minute. That'll take us. Like, it's unbelievable.
It's like half the thing. I have two pages of notes, and half of them are WTF marked next to them.
it's glorious. So
many.
Do we want to? Listen, maybe we should do a quick one where everyone does one, and then we'll come back to some of our other favorites.
All right, sure. Let's do that.
Then. Oh my god!
All right, so you want my score for this?
Yeah.
Okay. I've decided to score this one a relatively low 12.
None of us are arguing. You notice none of us are going, you can't do that. Because I had by mine 20.
It's all them plus. You know, like, it really is.
Conservative number, but, you know, I think.
It's a 10. If it's scoring for real, it's a 10. It's a 10. and I'll tell you, I mean, I'm not quite, because I know Jack was really excited about, like, the idea of, like, it's got a what the fuck moment in 4 seconds and 7 seconds and 11 seconds and stuff like that.
Sometimes you have to wait all the way till 11 seconds. After 4 and 7, we had a long wait till 11 seconds for the next one.
I mean, I didn't quite think that the ninja, like, driving up and walking through the desert was quite what the fucky. I mean, there's certainly some moments.
It's a ninja on a golf course in the middle of the day for no reason.
Dude, that happens 2 minutes in. but no. He's there to kill somebody.
Yeah, we never know why.
We don't know
somebody
why.
For some reason.
and there's your, I'm sorry, I'm going to steal it right now. What the fuck? I'm going to steal it. I'm just going to go. I love, and immediately, like, the guards show up and police officers. I love that they're using codes for the police officers. Like, this is common. Like, it's a 436. It's a 436 ninja on a golf course.
What I just can't explain, there's just so much about the golf course that I can't explain, which is awesome. I can't explain why the ninja, I assume he was just there to kill one person, but then he decided that he actually had to kill everybody around them, and he didn't just do it with an arrow, like would make sense from the tree that he was in, but he decided to eventually jump down, and he had to fight, and then of course the cops are there in less than 10 seconds. So it's like no time at all that there's 50 cops, And
in fairness, it's a golf course in LA that probably is the best patrolled area.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, once you get to the point where he's just battling back and forth, it's, and I know that there's that I feel like there's something special about the scene with the amount of bullets fired or something like that, the amount of times that the ninjas hit, but it's just it's so crazy. And yes, the fact that the ninja manages to survive that overall is truly a what the fuck scenario.
Yeah, I'm gonna get some hate on this one. A lot of hate. I'm only rating this a 5 on the WTF.
Fuck off!
Wow.
No, so, no. In my mind, there is one WTF scene. The what? First one.
What?
After the first one, I was on board. After you see a ninja on a golf course get shot by a billion cops at point blank range and walk away.
Well, he kind of
by
stumbled.
The time you get to the ninja dungeon, bondage dungeon, you're like, yeah, this is happening. A WTF actually is when you actually, did I just see what I thought I saw? I
no,
didn't have to go
no,
back and check
moron.
That shit.
No, no, that is not a WTF. A WTF is shit that's thrown in there that makes no sense for
it makes shit. Perfect sense.
It doesn't.
After that first scene, it establishes the film logic.
So,
I would be disappointed if there wasn't a ninja bondage scene after that first scene.
So you're
it
completely
makes sense.
But I don't even have that as a WTF.
Bondage scene takes a whole 20 more minutes to get to this memorable moment.
I'm just throwing that as an example, man. Well, that is just
really
a high point.
Here's a WTF moment, okay? And I'm giving us a 10. We're moving on from him. He doesn't get to talk anymore about this category now. He's done. He's gone, okay?
Dedicated.
Right there in the beginning, I'll give you two real quick ones. There he is, and there's the ninja, and he's killed these people, and the police show up, and helicopters and all this stuff, like I say, and the ninjas are running towards these two police officers on motorbikes. They're coming towards him, and he just runs in between them. like they're on bikes, and he's running towards them, and they're like, fuck, he's coming towards us really slowly. We haven't got the skills to stop him from doing that.
Well, of course, because he's a ninja, they're not.
That's right between them. They stop their bikes and look at him like, shit, I guess we should have stopped him. Like that's a,
what? Did you really think the ninja was going to get caught?
I didn't think he was going to run between them on a bike that's going 1/50th the speed or on foot. Like, it's unbelievable. It's a what the fuck? Why did that happen? Because they had bikes and they wanted to have them in the shots. Like, shit, yes. We just got to fit them in there. We don't want him catching that or that ninja. Just have him run in between.
Ninja magic.
I mean, they had a helicopter. They got the entire police force, not just the entire LA police force, but they had the San Diego police force. They had, I think they had the entire police force of California there to attempt to shoot the ninja. That I don't even know how they, like, obviously, because as was brought up, they have a code for ninja attack.
Doesn't understand the category. There's so many more. Let me give another quick one. Here's a really fast example, and then we'll get to you, Jim. Really fast example. Later on, when she's possessed by the ninja, she goes, like, she calls him before she goes out and kills somebody, kills one of the police officers who killed her in revenge. And she shows back up the next morning, and the guy who's the police officer, and we'll get into this, but the police officer who's her boyfriend, he goes, there he walks in with groceries for no reason because they don't live together or anything. They've known each other like a day. He walks in with all these groceries, sets them down, and goes, there you are. I've been looking all over for you. I'm like, she's in our house.
Well, he's been walking around.
Look.
He's been wandering around the streets with groceries. Okay.
I don't think that's a what the fuck. That's a what the fuck
I checked the police station where I work. I checked the grocery store, clearly. I checked, the hallway outside your apartment.
I considered going to the aerobic studio
that you work at part-time when you're not working, when you're not a lineman for the county.
Now,
pick up for his five.
One place I'll tell you that the cop did not go was he did not go to get his back waxed. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, you stole it. I knew I should have jumped in. That's my WTF moment. Billy the Stalker Cop's back hair. It's amazing.
I can't believe that they brought this guy in, like, and then gave him those shirts to wear with that back hair.
Oh my god, he looks like Wolverine.
It's like Robin Williams had a love child with an Iranian, and
let's not jump over that. Let's go back to the romance that happens between Billy and Chris.
Oh yes, the romance.
So Billy meets her when she's at and when she's given a statement at the police station. She blows him off, and then he looks up her address and phone number and finds out where she works so that he can give it another try. Now, this today would be a problematic relationship, except. She sleeps with him immediately.
No, you're wrong. It's more what the fuck than that. Because
there's one more what the fuck in the middle. Yes,
it is true. It is true.
That's the thing, right? He hits on her. She says no. She blows him off. She's just seen somebody die. It's traumatic. She doesn't want to be with him. He's like, what the fuck's her problem? He follows her to her work or whatever. Looks it up, like you say, to her other job. Not the one where she's climbing poles. The one where she's now an aerobics instructor. and then he's in her class and he's not in shape, so he falls over for comedy. She beats up some guys outside.
What I call in my note, the daytime rapists.
Because who are at the gym working out, because this is essentially suggesting that dudes who go to the gym to work out are rapists. Because
they're trying to rape somebody.
By the time we first see them in the workout studio, from their jewelry, we were tell that they were rapists.
Yes. So,
before they did anything remotely rapey, I knew who these guys were right off the bat.
They were leering quite a lot.
You knew that they were getting ready.
They were leering. So anyway, so some other woman they're going to rape, and instead she shows up and she uses her newfound hyper spirit ninja skills to beat up these guys in one of the greatest fight scenes in history of mankind. Okay. And you're like, why isn't Secord, the police officer, here? Jordan Bennett, the actor who played him, who, by the way, played
De Bergerac?
Yeah, on Broadway.
nice.
Cyrano de Bergerac has a lot of fucking body hair.
Yeah, so anyway, so she beats these guys up. You're like, why isn't the police officer stopping her? Well, it's probably because every shot that you see, the wide shot, he's not there. Only in the close-ups that they threw in later. Making me wonder when he showed up or if he did. So anyway, so he takes her, decides not to arrest her for this because she's the one in trouble, you know, beating up the rapists while he's just standing there, this police officer. So then he takes her in the car and, you know, he's taking her home and he comes onto her again and she blows him off again. So then he yells at her like, hey, I'm stalking you.
I'm tired of stalking you and you stalking not putting you out, woman.
Inappropriate. I'm using my police powers for personal gain. If you can't appreciate this, then get out of my car. And that's when she looks at him and thinks, God, I gotta fuck him.
According to every movie I've seen based in the 80s, that's the way it's done.
Well, that's
what in the 80s you called the move.
Yeah, that's what happened, right? Who knew, right? I mean, so, you know, you really should. All you got to do is just go up to a woman and start yelling at her, and then like she'll fall madly in love with you. That's all it takes.
I mean, today they would just call that negging.
that but at the time they had to be a little more complex with it.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Billy the Stalker Cop. I don't know about. Did I give a score there?
I don't think you did.
Because I'm going to give the correct score, which is 10.
Yes.
And
fucking idiot.
And I mean, there's so many crazy things. I mean, the daytime is someone going to get raped scene where the cop doesn't do anything is just insane.
Well, the cops. The only good at shooting people in leering, too. I mean, make no doubt.
Like, at leering, they do lots of leering themselves.
Every time she walks into the police station, it's just like, hey, baby, who are you looking for?
Well, that's because no one in the 80s had a bra. So, I mean, there's going to be some attention paid. I mean, let's you know, in fairness, you know, she's wearing a tank top and no bra, like a guys are going to look. That's going to happen.
As most people who go up and down telephone poles are living do.
And teach aerobics. Let's be honest. I mean, the teaching aerobics is a big deal because whenever she's in the middle of being possessed, you know, she comes out of it and it's just like, oh, I've got to do some aerobics. I got to do some aerobics. Okay, that's what'll fight off this possession of the ninja. Sorry, domination.
Yeah, that's right. My favorite one. If we go back to that scene where with the that's my most WTF moment. I think the whole thing is when you talk about where she the floating sword and the lasers coming out of the thing, and she's being dragged towards the closet by this spirit. It goes away. It closes the door that closes to the closet, and she turns around and she doesn't think, I got to get out of here.
it's her fucking house.
She turns around immediately. First thing she does is, fuck, I better dance. Turns on the music, starts dancing. Then the spirit comes out again. And now instead of trying to run away from the spirit again, she just keeps dancing while now it's dragging her towards for no reason. It's awesome.
I love the fact that the spirit chooses different areas. So at first, like, it was the laser light show out of the arcade game. Next, it was like the laser light show out of the fucking carburetor under the sink or whatever, you know, and then it's just like, oh, this music, I can't take this music. So it destroys the stereo and stuff like that. I mean, it's just like, I'm not completely sure why it had to have her when it already did.
You guys are talking like this took place in our world. It didn't. It took place in like a 80s Sin City type world. This did not take place.
This is not reality.
This is
Sin City if it was like Bizarro Sin City.
So the first possession scene, the first sword in the closet scene. Remember way back when we talked about Gymkhana and there was the. She has an interesting background. She's half. Her mother was Indonesian, and that, which is my favorite line in Gymkhana. This has a line exactly like that. So she wakes up in the middle of the night. Her hair's flying. There's lights, and she's got a ninja sword in her hand. And Harry back and McGee gets out of bed and says, "Hey, what's going on?" And then he sees the ninja sword, having just killed a ninja, like. An hour and a half ago, has been one of the people that had to tried to murder this ninja earlier in his day. He says,
which she was in for questioning for, no less.
he says, "Where did you get this?" And she answers, "It's Japanese."
Well, I liked it because there's that one moment where somebody's explaining about her, and it's just like, oh yeah, you know, female aerobics instructor has a big interest in Japanese in Japanese history, and I'm like, what? When did this suddenly become a thing? Because if you look at her apartment, other than the fact that she has a fucking sword in her towel closet,
there's literally nothing else that indicates
that. Nothing that indicates that.
She doesn't have like a dollar store or Buddha or anything. Yeah. It's just nothing.
So it's just like, wow, they've learned this about her really quickly.
And we're only talking about the what the fuck moments that took place in the movie. We're not talking about the what the fuck moments that are the actual filmmaking. Like the fact that that the stunt double for her when she becomes a ninja is a man.
It's a dude.
Really obvious man.
I love that. That is truly one of those great, great things.
That's that Steve Lambert guy. Here's a good story. Steve Lambert, the very first time you see her, it's her climbing up the pole, but it's him, you know, with this wig on. And he said, oh, yeah, I was watching this with my friends. And, you know, I said to her, hey, what do you think? She's got a pretty good body. And they're all like, yeah. And I was like, ha ha, it's me. And how about that for the fact that it's so obviously a male stunt double to this very curvaceous, lovely young lady? That's a what the fuck.
Now, we haven't talked about the dungeon yet, and I think we should give the dungeon a few minutes with James Hong, because that is oh, one of those.
God. Consider this to be a memorable moment, not a what the fuck.
Do we want to transition?
Let's move here? On then. Yes.
Now, memorable moments are scenes that are different than WTF. These are the moments that we will carry with us to our graves, that will inspire us. That when we give our TED Talks, we will show on the screen behind us to explain our love for these sorts of movies. Stan, why don't jump in with your memorable moments.
Well, honestly, I mean, for me, it will exist within my mind forever. It is the arcade game with the laser and the light show and the... and all that. Like, when I just think back to that, and I see that, and I think, God damn, that was the 80s. And it was just so... and it was just so 80s and so good. And leg warmers and shit, oh, you know, I just... that moment right there, it truly encapsulates everything for me. So I'm going to give this one an 8.
Yeah. There was a lot of memorable moments, stuff I loved. We mentioned the dungeon scene, but we didn't mention is when they bring out the bondage equipment and plop this chains and leather domination device down on a table. Nobody blinks an eye. And I just love the fact that this isn't a prop. This is somebody, this is so high quality that you know somebody was bringing the shit in from home.
To me, I love the fact that Billy in that scene goes from like, oh yeah, I totally expected this to, what the fuck is going on? Oh, totally expected that. You know, like it's... there's just the scene.
No, this is fine. This is good. Yeah. We're good.
The scene by itself is just so amazing because the movie takes a left turn into horror and becomes The Exorcist.
I love that moment when they plop that down, you know, shit is getting real now. just loved it. The other one that stood up for me is the aerobic workout scene. That is the quintessential 80s scene.
It's so
And I think it's done better in this film than it is in Skin Deep or any Jane Fonda movie. This, I mean, she's got the rag warmers. She's got that perfect pink leotard. All the extras are just going for it. That room is full. It is the height of 80s aerobic workouts. They got some rocking tunes. That scene you could put in any one of 100 better films, and it would fit.
Nothing's better than this film.
There is no better film.
Man,
there is no
honestly, better film. Even Billy Secord's back hair was like doing aerobics in that scene. I mean,
That back hair was better than any of the makeup in Lord of the Rings.
Absolutely. No, this thing is true. What did you score? Nick.
He's Nick Boxer.
That's what I said. Is Nick? Yeah. I also give this an 8. Though I mean, there's 3 for me. Okay, the opening sequence, which we haven't given enough love to yet. We didn't mention he kicks he turns around a tree and kicks a car into a lake. We didn't mention the exploding helicopter. We didn't mention, we talked about him being shot, but we didn't mention that he gets shot. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, then he falls down after being shot like 100 times, literally, a point blank. Shotguns, pistols, machine guns, whatever, falls down. Everyone's like, "Woo, he's dead finally." Starts to get up, and they're like, "Oh fuck!" And they start shooting again. You know?
Did you not? Do you not get that he's a ninja?
He's a fucking ninja. Yes.
Wait. That's what ninjas do.
There's another thing.
I learned that from this movie.
There's another thing from that bit right there, though. They've surrounded him. They've got some of them have pistols. Some of them have automatic pistols. Some of them have revolvers. Some of them have shotguns. Some of them have automatic weapons, and they're standing in a tight circle.
Yes, I know.
Shooting. So he falls again, and they're like, finally, the second time, they're like, "Whoa, geez, that was weird," you know? So then he starts to get up a third time, so they start shooting him again, right? So then he pulls something out of his pocket and throws it down, and it's a smoke bomb, and he comes to, and there's a piece of his uniform there, and this guy picks it up and goes, "We gotta find this dude." Because that's what a police officer would say in that situation. We gotta find this dude. And they all run off in different directions to look for him. And it turns out he's hiding now underneath the sand and pops out. This is a memorable moment. Okay, so there's that. You talked about the Exorcist possession scene.
Don't do them all. Let me jump in with one. Like, don't list them all off. I mean,
I've only got 3. I'm leaving you 100. I'll leave you the Exorcist one then. Or actually, you know what? I'll leave you, but you better bring it up. The V8 juice.
Well, I was going to, but now you have.
I didn't say anything yet. I didn't say what it is. I just said it's the V8 juice.
All right. Well, let's talk about the bring up the dungeon then.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Jim, go ahead.
You want to do that? It's the V8 juice to me. This is my memorable moment. This is the most amazing product placement in the history of film. During the first romantic twist,
this, it was on the catering. I know this for a fact. This is in the Fact of Fury. It was on catering. They had mentioned a line of it earlier. Someone's like, "You know, we do have one of those." And I'll get more into it after you tell it.
So she strips down to her panties with her back toward Wolverine, and she then puts a shirt back on because sexy times. straddles him and then slowly pours a can of V8 down through her cleavage.
Now
in the most vampire-like scene. It's like a vegan vampire, maybe. Tell us the backstory of this, Jack. I need to know.
Okay, so like I said, they had the line, and somebody, she didn't want to do nudity. You know, she didn't want to do nudity. So now you have two people. You have Jordan Bennett, the actor who played Billy Secord, the boyfriend, police officer, rapist dude.
stalker.
Sexual predator, whatever you want to call it. Like
serial predator, yeah. Going, I came up with this. And then, of course, you also had director Sam Furstenberg going, "This was my idea," because it's genius. So like you say, she pours this all over herself because she didn't want to do it. But apparently it was, she wasn't going to do nudity. So they wanted to make it kinky, though. They wanted to find something kinky. So that's what they came up with. So they poured this all over herself. And then she's complaining because continuity. She's still, it's like early in the shoot. She's like, "But there's a continuity issue. It was all over me in this next shot. There's barely any." And, you know, not knowing yet. She thinks she's in a real movie at this point.
As you know, V8 down the chest means real movie.
Yes.
I love the little bits that indicate that they were definitely thinking this was the Oscar bait role that they were.
For your consideration.
This was for a little while a problem for her. She's like, but this is the, she's making a movie for Canon Studios, who literally the head of it, what was his name, Menom Golham. Literally, somebody once said to him, we're shooting in Brooklyn. We need a picture of the Brooklyn Bridge. And he goes, bridge is a bridge. It's the most famous bridge in the world. So continuity, not an issue for them. Canon films priority.
So the
we get to the, I give this an 8, by the way. We get to the confrontation between the arisen ninja, Jesus ninja, who has come back after 3 days.
the resurrection rolls back
and
zombie ninja, by the way,
zombie ninja comes back.
No bullet holes in that uniform that he was shot in 400 million times.
But he's only a zombie for like 3 minutes.
I'm assuming that the monks that live in walking distance from downtown LA fixed him up.
Yeah, that's true.
They live in this, like, the deserts just outside of.
Yeah, at no time did I think that it was the same uniform.
Yeah, I mean, he had lots of clothes. Clearly, she got them from the cave.
Yeah, and that's fair because, I mean, but I do love the fact that this the temple is, I think it must be 5 minutes away from the weapons cache in the.
It's like I'm assuming it's like Silver Lake. Silver Lake probably looked like that in the 80s.
Yeah, in the desert. Plus, all of that is 5 minutes away from the golf course where like the big murder scene happened at the beginning of the movie.
Here's one thing, though, that there is this temple, and it looks great. Like, the outside of this temple, and you're like, where is this? There's the More Heart Than Budget thing. That was a matte painting.
Nice.
Wow.
Excellent. Yeah.
It looked fantastic. That's impressive. Yeah. It did. It looked great. Yeah. I was like, where on earth was there a location that they could afford to shoot at that's that close to L.A.?
Frankly, they should have matte painted the fucking sword then.
Yeah.
This was shot in Phoenix, by the way, not L.A.
Oh, really?
This takes place in Phoenix.
Oh. Learn something new every day. And I'm learning so much. Okay, so they have made this statement. The statement's on the poster, only a ninja can kill a ninja. They say it a couple of times. It comes up throughout the film, only a ninja can kill a ninja. So then it gets down to I'm watching the movie, and Shokushogi is fighting the zombie ninja, and Chris jumps in and stabs zombie ninja with a sword. And I'm watching this and thinking thematically, this makes perfect sense. She's been possessed by the ninja, so she is ninja and can kill him, which is not what happens.
Nope.
No, but like makes this perfect thematic closure, and then the two ninjas go back to fighting, and she her and her walking carpet that she's dating. stand by and watch quietly while the ninjas fight it out.
Oh, they look like they're studying a piece of art as this dead ninja and this other ninja are fighting. Like, huh, that looks interesting. I would have made a different decision. That was the original ending. They shot that after, like a few weeks after. They brought all the actors back. They had to put a wig on Lucinda Dickey, for the acting. I know she was wearing a wig at some points because that was a pickup. They decided to add that in, that they needed that extra bit. So it wasn't originally something. And also Shokuzugi was pretty pissed at how much he was overshadowed in this movie and how little he had to do in it. Though there is pretty much every time back to the, what the fuck moments, like, holy God, I forgot a huge one. Can I go back to it?
We'll re-edit this. So
let's talk about every time he shows up right after she's killed somebody, like he has a sense of where she is, but there's no reason why he would know in this huge city that she's just been there killing somebody. He always shows up right afterwards. I was like, that's a what the fuck. But the better what the fuck, the one where he kills and shows up afterwards, the scene in the hot tub.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. No, nothing that's happening like for that whole character makes any sense.
Any of this makes any sense. You have a cop who's an old ugly dude who's got these two super hot chicks, and he's a cop who want to go on with him. So they get into a hot tub together because they're gonna bone. But Chrissy shows up as the ninja so she can kill them. And she's getting in the hot tub. And these two that are about to have a threesome with him are offended that another woman is at it.
Yeah, it's like they want to share him.
It must be some sort of public hot tub, too. Because they're not like, how did you get in here? They're not like, what are you doing in my house? They're like, oh, this one's occupied.
is their reaction.
And like, hey, wait, she's coming on to him. So then they're like, well, yes, fine, if you want to have that other woman that's not me and this other person I don't barely know. If you want to have that third woman, then you're a cad.
I just thought it was some sort of breach in prostitute protocol.
Nick, you have an amazing ability to justify things.
I think that's the best scene reading that I've come across. That makes more sense than anything I had.
It's true. It is true. Like, I mean,
so I watched this movie with my lovely wife Lacey, and she kept asking.
She take on your last Lacey Cano?
No, she kept her maiden name, Lacey Underalls. She's been enjoying watching these films with her. It is my anniversary today, so happy anniversary, Lacey. And
you're doing this. Well, priorities.
I
prioritize this.
She said, you've got to stop talking about this movie sometime. maybe get it
out of your system.
So, but she kept, the thing she kept asking was, okay, so he's on a mission. He's a, you know, he's ninja assassin. He does his job. And then there's like 8,000 cops after him. He kills 90% of them. And then, you know, he dies and possesses, but she could not get why he was so obsessed with getting revenge on the cops, because the cops didn't really, like, there was nothing personal about that at all.
Nothing.
Like, there's like, he's like, of all the things for him to be obsessed from beyond the grave on, like the cops that were there, like at the very end, like these, like, but it just keeps coming back. Like, if this movie would be like 45 minutes long without the flashbacks, because it's constantly flashing back.
Oh man, this is one of the cops that shot me. How dare he shoot me after
when I was killing that everybody. Person?
After I killed him.
But if you shoot a ninja fatally, of course you can't kill a ninja unless you're a ninja. What if somebody shoots the ninja and then becomes a ninja? Oh. It's a safety concern. You have to kill somebody.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go.
You guys don't get ninjas. And by the way, Shokusugi could, because he is a ninja, he could sense the ninja. That's how he knew where she was all the time.
That, you know, one of the things, I accept, you know, one that. Of the
things, it's not, like, you keep saying things like ninja isn't the answer. I watched this movie, ninja is always the answer.
You know what moment I did love was the moment where he shows up. And there's these two guys, and I don't know, they're in the morgue or what? Where are they or something like that? And it's like these two, I don't know, paramedics or something like that. And they're sitting there, and he just looks at them. And he's just like, come here. And they're like, what? He's like, come here. And they walk right up, and he just pops their heads together. That's a memorable moment. That was awesome.
And it's great because, like, those two look like they came out of her fucking aerobics class or something.
Yes, they do.
Not like they belong in the morgue.
I kind of figured they're a rapist. I was actually defending. Sort of disappointed there wasn't a scene after where they were, you know, hitting on a nurse or something.
why don't we jump into the crazy concept right now?
Yes, let Stan kick us off with crazy concept. How maybe just try to come up with a elevator pitch for this movie.
Well, it's essentially, what is it? As I was watching it, I realized that it's kind of like several movies all put together, because I mean, it is a ninja movie. It's got The Exorcist, and then it's got something else. I can't quite remember exactly what it was, but it felt like I was watching three separate movies that I'd already seen before, but just layered on top with a million weird pieces of filmmaking. So honestly, it is amongst the most crazy things I can imagine watching. So I will happily give it a 9.
Yeah, I can go with 8. Although I do think the pitch was probably like, we got Shokuzugi for like 3 days. I bet we can knock a third one out.
Man, I don't even know if you needed 3 days for that.
It was literally, you know, hey, the ninjas are hot. We got something there. hey, Flashdance is hot, let's add that in. Hey, Poltergeist is hot, let's add that in. Like, that literally was the conception of this movie. And it made for something crazy. I'm going to give it, it's totally crazy. I'm going to give it a 9. Because I do think we can get even more insane. But this is pretty fucking crazy.
Yeah, this is like Jane Fonda's Workout meets The Omen meets a Chuck Norris film. what? Oh man, this is like such a wacky movie. Like everything about it would actually make more sense if it wasn't for the weird aerobics underlying thing. Like if she was just a lineman for the county, like, you know, like she was originally, it would probably make like a touch more sense. But that's never returned to. Like, it was really like, it was like she does that part time and she's an aerobics teacher full time.
I actually kind of just like that she had a job. A lot of movies, yeah, you know, they mention you have a job and then they never go.
Yeah, like she works hard to have an empty room for an apartment.
Well, it's downtown LA. That can't be too cheap.
No, I hear it's Phoenix.
Either way, I mean, it's impressive. It's very impressive what she must earn.
Yeah, good honor.
Phoenix, or did it take place in Phoenix?
Both.
So that wasn't LA at all?
No.
I really thought that it took place. I was willing to believe it was shot in Phoenix. But also the narrative I thought was taking place in LA.
Fair enough. So I also gave this an 8. Do we have more things to say before we wrap up the scores on this bad boy?
We could, but we won't. Because literally we would be here all night.
You know what? You know what I think maybe we should consider doing is I think we should consider doing a special wrap-up show where we do kind of a 9th for this season and just talk about every movie and how much it meant to us as a whole. What do you think?
Well, I thought we could just do a live recording in the background, have the movie while we watch it and just set the thing to tape and just all get together. Cause God damn it. I don't mean, we forgot.
I don't mean this movie though. You know, like I mean like just talk about like every movie from the season, but, and just kind of mash it all up.
Well, I'm looking forward to the scores. I know we have a new champion.
It's I feel like it's dominated the competition.
All right. Well, as always, we have our secret modifiers, and this movie picks up a +1 because the stunt choreography was done by Shokushugi, his own bad self. So that gives it a +1, making this the new top movie in our search for the ultimate B movie with a mind-numbing, staggering 87.5 out of 100.
The being previous a full champion
20 points ahead of the previous leader.
Wow.
The previous champion I thought was incredible, and that was Gymkhana. And this just like wow.
Because it truly is almost everything that you're looking for in a B movie in that regard. It gives you so many crazy moments. It's got fucking ninjas, it's got arcade games with laser light shows, it's got golfing.
I know, you know, God, wouldn't you love to play that game?
Leg warmers.
The company that made that game apparently pretty much ran out of money, so it was never widely distributed. Bouncer. But it looked awesome.
Oh yeah, I mean it was everything and a bag of chips right there. I'll tell you right now, it may not be my favorite movie to like consider rewatching, but for just having so much and to be able to combine memorable moments and the what the fuck moments plus have a crazy concept, that truly does near the Holy Grail territory.
Yeah, I got nothing left to add.
All right, well.
I'm exhausted, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's.
I do want to say this. I mentioned that the Jordan Bennett. He also in 2015 he released a CD because he was originally a comedian, He stopped being a comedian and went more into the song and stage plays because he was opening for Milton Berle and there was a bunch of like 80-year-old women and he told an off-color joke and Berle came out and just grabbed the mic and told him to get off stage. So he decided he wouldn't be, but he released a CD, Jordan Bennett original. And you can find that on like Spotify and iTunes Music and Google Music and this stuff. And you're damn right, it's what I'm listening to on the way into work tomorrow.
Oh, that's fantastic stuff. Ah, all right. Well, I feel like we're all spent. It's like, you know, we just had like a marathon session and we're spent. It was like we were doing the aerobics workout and now we're Chewbacca. The cop, but
dude, I'm gonna have to skip right to the end because I see Knights in White Satin is the second to last song, and then Hallelujah.
Oh boy! well, I hope he's a better singer than he was an actor in this one.
Well, it would be impossible not to be.
All right, well, Jim, why don't you give us tell all the fans where to find us?
All right, find us on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo and use the hashtag Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo to tell us about your favorite B films and hopefully we can get to some of those in the future if we ever stop watching Ninja 3 The Domination on repeat.
Well, I'll tell you right now, if we're going to finish watching Ninja 3 The Domination, it will be to immediately jump into our next movie, which is Raw Force,
aka oh my God.
Kung Fu Cannibals.
Oh. How many? Yeah, are there more alternate titles for this one? Like it seemed like it got released a bunch of times.
Kung Fu Killers, I believe, Kung Fu Cannibals. Yeah. Awesome. Oh man. Oh, just incredible.
So I gotta say, I am super excited about our next episode as well.
And I just want to say. I just want to say to Nick, fuck you for dragging down the score in Greenland only an 87.
It would have been a 90.
Hey, man, it's not like I didn't like this film. I learned from this film. I learned ninjas don't get dizzy. but I'm sorry. I just can't rate it that high.
You just truly score on a curve. You know, you really do. Like once you've established that baseline, then it's just like, well, it's fucked up. So its baseline is really high.
Yeah,
so it just keeps on with that.
I think if it had a dip into normalcy at some point, I would have probably rated it higher on the WQF. But it never. Once it establishes that crazy baseline, we're in for the ride. And I loved it. I wouldn't have it any other way.
It is. It's a wonderful piece, and we highly recommend that everybody goes out there and buy the Blu-ray because it's a beautiful, beautiful Blu-ray, and everybody should own it because perhaps maybe we can make sure that they make a Ninja 4.
Yeah, the Blu-ray was just released recently from Shout Factory's Scream Factory section. They did a fantastic job with the Blu-ray and as they usually do. So yeah, no question. There's also a Blu-ray that's also pretty cool for that Raw Force. So, but this one is, yeah, really good job.
It's great stuff. It's great stuff. I'm looking forward to coming back for the next episode because Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo is truly the gift that keeps on giving. So I'll tell you, from Brad, who hopefully will be back next week, from my pals, Stan. Well, I'm Stan. From my pals, Jack and Nick, and of course, Jim. I am 8th Dan Stanadu, and this has been another episode of Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
Stanadu!